Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silly Cast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com. Today is Sunday, January 15th, 2006, and this is show number 26. Well, what'd you think of that snazzy new intro? Can you tell that I got a new copy of iLife 06 with GarageBand, built-in podcasting, and a new microphone? Well, listener Ron inspired me to get a new mic. He's been talking to me a lot about how the sound quality is so important to good recording. And everyone who thinks that they agree that the sound sounds better now needs to thank him in the comments at podfeet.com. I was also inspired by Father Roderick of the Catholic Insider podcast. He put it perfectly. He said, "It's so fatiguing to listen to a bad recording." It was when I heard that that it just pretty much put me over the edge and said, "Time for a new microphone." I got the Samsung C01U USB condenser mic. It's the world's first USB studio condenser microphone, and it even has a sticker on it that says, "Ideal for podcasting." Well, how could I refuse? So my buddy Ron and I had fun buying it, especially the part where I got out for under $100, including the mic stand. We spent hours playing with Audacity and Wiretap Pro and system preferences and the Samsung software and GarageBand to see if we could find as many separate places as possible to adjust the gain and, you know, pretty much mess things up. I think we got it down right now. We're doing pretty good. Tell me how it sounds. Send me feedback at allison@podfeet.com or put a comment on the website. That is, if you can get to the website. I'm having, again, issues with VisaWeb. I'm seriously considering maybe I need to move my podcast to a different site, a different hosting provider, because I'm having all kinds of trouble. For the better part of this week, I wasn't able to use mail at all. Luckily, I could still use the web service. But now I can't get to podfeet.com. It appears that they're not providing any HTTP services, even though I can FTP to the site. I can look at the webmail online. I can ping it, but I can't get to it. So I hope by the time this recording is up, we're having a little more success and you're able to put a comment on the website. And in fact, I'm having trouble with mail again, so if you try emailing me at allison@podfeet.com, hopefully I'll get it. Someday, I'm sure I will. So anyway, our happy little electronic day on Saturday continued with getting digital cable. I used to have digital cable, but then they canceled Leo Laporte's shows on Tech TV, fired everyone on the screensavers in a massive bit of protest. I took my two digital cable boxes down to Adelphia, and I turned them in and bought TiVo instead. Boy, that was a good trade out. But my husband really likes good sound and he really likes a good picture and he's kind of obsessed about it. So I told him he could get digital cable again. So now we have six remote controls. We have TV, TiVo, digital cable box, the stereo, the DV, and of course the Roku sound bridge. There's no chance I'm going to be able to even watch TV, but that's okay. I listen to podcasts mostly anyway. I don't watch much TV. Let's do a little country update. Welcome to our new listeners from Greece and Iceland. How cool is that? I gotta say, I see our Internet Explorer usage creeping up to around 14% again. If you're not using Firefox or an alternative browser and you're on a PC, you really should consider changing for security reasons. I did a podcast on that topic a few weeks back. I would tell you which podcast it was if I could get to my website, but I can't. So hopefully you can go back and find it and see why I'm saying to use Firefox. But after I did that podcast, we got the usage of Internet Explorer down to about 11%. So let's push that back down. I want everyone to be practicing safe computing. Little update on Google Earth. I had posted a while back a link to the beta version of Google Earth that accidentally snuck out for the Macintosh, and now the official one is available. So if you go to earth.google.com, you should be able to go load that. It says it's specifically for OS 10.4 and up, and listener Neil is suspecting that's why he was having trouble loading it before, because he's running Panther. So hopefully if that works for you on 10.4, that should be a lot of fun. The one thing I noticed was that the logo looks nicer than the beta one. The beta one was all jaggy and the new one looks nice. Other than that, I didn't notice any change in functionality. seems fairly snappy, so nothing wrong there. All right, I kept from talking about Apple's Macworld Expo event as long as I could, but it's time to dig into it. Apple started with their fourth quarter earnings, which were just absolutely amazing. Apple's revenue was at $5.7 billion. To put that into perspective, it's never been above $4 billion in the last 3 years, and it was creeping up the last 3 years. And $5.7 billion was $1 billion more than analysts' expectations. Needless to say, the stock went through the roof, and that's been crazy to watch. This revenue number is up 63% from a year ago today. They sold 14 million iPods. This is just the last quarter, right? The fourth quarter of last year. 14 million iPods is an average of 100 iPods a minute for 3 months straight. Anybody out there not buying an iPod? Must not be anybody out there. There was a Wall Street Journal article on Saturday talking about the tech boom coming. They believe that the tech market is going to be a growth market again, which is a lot of fun. And the thing that caught my eye in the article was they had an Apple logo mutating into a bull and over four screens. And so that caught my eye. But in the article, they showed Apple stock going up over the last 3 months, and then Microsoft stock and Cisco Systems. And they didn't do it quite fair, but it shows Apple stock going from around 55 in October up to 85 now. And Microsoft's went from about 24 to 26, just like $2. But Cisco Systems is up about $2 also. So Apple stock obviously leading the screaming rampage here. I was thinking about it. I was very excited to hear these numbers. You know, I'm sure everybody in the audience was just like, woohoo, we're so happy to see Apple doing well. And I think that comes from years of being worried about their stability and whether they're really going to make their mark in the market and be able to stick around and not be bought by Disney or somebody or Sun or something. But it also made me think about, I remember going to a user group for a piece of CAD software that I was heavily involved in, and I was really irritated that the CIO would get up there with the CFO and they'd march around talking about how much money they made. And it made me kind of feel like a chump for spending all my money with them. So I'm wondering if there's going to be a point where we aren't happy when Apple is talking about how much money they make. Well, it doesn't bother me yet, but at some point there might be a point where we're thinking, hey, you know, maybe bring those margins down a little bit, guys. Well, let's start talking about other things they announced. One of the things was an FM receiver/remote for the iPod. It's kind of cool because it plugs into the bottom of your iPod and then, or into the cord for your iPod, and it shows the radio station on the iPod display. It shows it either in analog or digital, which is kind of cute because you can rotate the dial and see the little dial go around. It works only with the Nano and the fifth generation iPods. I'm not really sure why. That doesn't make any sense to me why it couldn't have, but maybe there's something in the firmware of those items that was the responsible for it being able to work there. Anyway, it's around $49 and kind of a cute little accessory. $49 for an FM radio. I'll just listen to my podcast anyway. So they did a lot of updates to the software, and in a way it's a little more exciting than the hardware announcements because the hardware announcements won't be for everybody. But I think a lot of people are going to want to jump on some of the software applications they came out with. He did a review of iLife 06, starting with iPhoto. And in iPhoto, he described a new thing he's calling photocasting. So it's sort of like podcasting. It allows you to publish photos online on .Mac you have to publish it with .Mac. But other people, even people without Macs, even people with PCs, can subscribe to those photos and then get updates whenever you post. You know all the difficulty there is sending photos of the baby to grandma and her having to figure out how to look at it in her email and all that. Might be kind of nice if they could just subscribe. He emphasized the fact that this uses industry standard RSS, so it should be available for everybody. iMovie's big announcement was that you can open more than one project at a time. And I know Adam Christensen was talking about this on the MacCast, and he said that he was amazed anybody would ever want to open more than one project because one project kept him completely entertained. But he was forgetting one thing that you do want to do sometimes is you might want to grab a clip from one movie and move it into another one. That was never easy, but now you can open them both up, move it over, and then probably close the other one. He showed a lot of new themes, which might be fun. Haven't had a chance to look at those yet, though. iDVD can do widescreen now, but doesn't that mean we have to go buy new camcorders to film in widescreen to take advantage of it? And it can also make magic DVDs, so no editing, just make me a darn DVD. Push that button and go. That could be fun. GarageBand is probably the most interesting changes to me anyway, because it includes Podcast Studio for making podcasts. And so you can add your sound, you can add jingles in. Anybody notice that snazzy new intro? I'm pretty excited about it. Don't worry, this excitement will wear off and I'll be normal later. One of the things that's kind of cool is there's a kind of podcast called an enhanced podcast, and that's one where you can put images that are changing throughout the podcast, or possibly links, different things that you want your subscribers to be able to see. I'm not sure if it works in all podcatchers. I know it does work in iTunes, but it could be kind of cool. Like when I was just talking about the FM receiver, if you were following along in the show notes, you could see a picture of the receiver. But what if that could be what pops up on screen when you're watching the podcast or listening to the podcast if you're in iTunes? That might be kind of cool. I mean, I know you'd all rather look at my face, but you know, sometimes you got to make do and look at something else. Don't worry, I'll put it back in at the end. So that sounds kind of cool. So there's a lot of integration of the different tools. I don't quite get this yet, but it sounds like a really cool feature of GarageBand, if it works like they say, is that you could actually pull little movies into GarageBand. And the place you would use that is if you want to do some fancier editing of the soundtrack in GarageBand instead of trying to do it over in iMovie, you could bring it in, do clipping and stuff, and you can actually see where the soundtrack is with respect to the movie. And then I think you can push it back into iMovie. That's going to take some fooling around. Got to see if that actually works. One feature in GarageBand for podcasting is that it includes ducking. And I don't know if you noticed at the beginning in my intro, I had a song playing, and then as soon as I started talking, the volume of the sound pulled down. Well, I didn't actually do that. GarageBand did that automatically, and that's called ducking. And it actually came back up when I stopped talking. So that's kind of cool. I mean, I think people spend a lot of time grabbing the sound, pulling it down, pushing it back up, that kind of thing. They've included royalty-free sound effects, so the music that I put in there was royalty-free, and I think that's pretty cool. That was a huge part of the download, or part of the install, was the soundtracks they put in there, so that's kind of cool. They added speech enhancements, so in theory, you can record your voice using the internal microphone on your PowerBook, and it's supposed to sound great. I'm not challenging that, of course, because I'm using my new Samsung microphone. But it was there is a speech enhancement section, and I've played around with turning that on and off, and I tend to get a little hiss. Actually, listener Ron has talked about a hum he hears, but I hear a hiss, and when I turned on the enhancement, it seems to just go away. It does make the sound kind of dead as soon as I stop talking. Well, that is, if I ever took a breath and stopped talking, you would notice that it just kind of goes dead. Here, I'll do it right now. There, that's how long I can be quiet. Anyway, you're supposed to also be able to use iChat to do remote interviews and have it as a separate track coming in when you're talking on iChat. That could be really cool. I plan to check that out for sure. iLife and iWork are both universal, which is short for universal binaries, which means they run under PowerPC and Intel. The cool thing about that means is you can buy iLife 06 right now, and if a year from now you buy an Intel-based Mac, or even in next month, there's no penalty. You've already bought the one that's going to work on both machines, PowerPC machines and Intel machines. I think that's really cool. I did notice an interesting thing on the family pack. I'm a big believer in the family pack because I've got so doggone many machines in my house. But it says specifically that a member of your family does not include a student living away at school at a different address. I was kind of bummed about that because that means I can't give it to my daughter. But heck, I'll just wait till she's home for the summer and then load it up, because then she doesn't have a different address. So that should work. One thing that was really cool, I know it doesn't thrill everybody, but I still thought it was great, was Microsoft's head of the Mac business unit came out and she announced that they are committed to providing Microsoft Office for the next 5 years. I know none of us are thrilled that it's the greatest software suite of all time, but it's a necessary evil. And just in case the open source alternatives don't replace it, it'll be nice to know that we'll have the software around to be compatible for 5 more years. That's about as far out into the future as I can see. There's a service that can't remember whether Apple bought it from somebody or whether they invented this. I think they bought it. It's called Rosetta, and it basically allows you to run the PowerPC binary applications on the Intel-based Macintoshes in kind of an emulation mode. And it's supposed to run really well, but I got to give Steve Jobs his chops. He demonstrated Photoshop under Rosetta, and it wasn't real fast. It was functional, but it wasn't real snappy. And he said point blank that this performance would not meet the requirements of a professional Photoshop user. And I thought that was great because he's not pretending. And I just thought that worked out really well. I was pleased to see that. So for a guy who was always thrilled, you know, I'm thrilled about this, I'm thrilled about that, it was good that he just kind of said something like that to make himself a little more believable. He did think it was good enough for casual Photoshop users, and it looked pretty good to me. He made a great comment when he brought it up. It took about 20, 25 seconds to open up, so he had a chance to have two or three sips from his bottle of water. And he said, yeah, and then Photoshop's going to take a really long time to open up, like it always does. And I don't know about you, but it makes me nuts how long Photoshop takes to open up. Drives me crazy when I have a file that I thought was going to open up in Preview, and it opens up in Photoshop instead, and I have to go get a cup of coffee while I wait for it to come up. He did a demonstration of Microsoft Word under Rosetta, and it looked really good. He had photos in it, and it was maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 pages long, and he was scrolling up and down, and it scrolled pretty smoothly. Looked really good to me. A lot faster than it looks on my PowerBook 1.25 gigahertz machine, so. The next big announcement, or I should say, and one more thing, if you haven't already heard about it, if you're not sleeping under a rock there, is the MacBook Pro. It's going to take forever not to call it a PowerBook, but I guess he doesn't want to call it a PowerBook because it doesn't have a PowerPC in it, even though there were PowerBooks before they were PowerPCs. The exciting things about this, obviously the first thing is it's 4 to 5 times faster than the fastest PowerBook out there today, and they did it measuring it in spec benchmarks. I'm into using engineering workstations, and in there we look a lot at spec integer and spec floating point performance, and he put both of those up, and that's where he got the 4 to 5 times faster. That's not using any kind of tools, like a lot of times they'll do, you know, gaming benchmarks or benchmarks using Photoshop for a render. This is an industry standard benchmark that may have nothing to do with our performance, but it is something to look at. It has a built-in eyesight, which is kind of cool. I've always wondered about that, though. I mean, would you have to tilt the PowerBook to get the angle right instead of just tilting your eyesight? I guess it's easier than carrying something around. It's also slightly thinner. It's back to an inch thick, which is what the titaniums were, and I think the aluminums went up to 1.25 inches or something slightly thinner than that. The display is 67% brighter than it was before, and they quoted that as bright as the cinema display. I'm wondering what that does to your battery life. I think I'll be dialing that thing down, because my PowerBook's plenty bright. I find it pretty rare that I'm trying to crank it up once in a while, but not too bad. Probably one of the coolest features beyond the speed on this is a new power cord technology he calls MagSafe, patent pending. It's a power cord attachment technology that uses magnets. So when your power cord gets yanked, it doesn't pull the MacBook off the table. And everybody here knows about that, right? I've pulled mine off the table. My brother Kelly pulled his off the table in the hospital. It was just awful. And I liked what he said. He said, "You're tired of them breaking, and we're tired of fixing them." So that's pretty cool. I'd love to see how well that's going to work. It should be pretty good. Here's something crazy about this thing. The DVI output on this MacBook Pro can actually drive the 30-inch cinema display. They managed to get the dual data link in there required to drive it, And I don't know if you guys know this, but on the G5s, that was about a $400 graphics card add-on that you had to put in a G5 in order to get the dual data link to drive the cinema display. That cinema display is 4 million pixels. I can't believe the PowerBook can drive that. So one thing that's concerning a lot of people is they've done away with the PCM CIA slot. Well, Apple always likes to be the first to get rid of old technology, put in the new, and just say, move on, people. So I looked into this Express card 34 that they have instead, and I found an article on extremetech.com from 2003, which was talking about this crazy new slot that was going to come in 2004. I want to read that quote right now. It said, for many users, Express Card will be the first introduction into PCI Express, which in turn used to be called Next Generation I.O., NGIO, or 3GIO. However, Express Cards will combine USB and PCI Express functionality and will be used to replace front-loading USB cards such as flash card readers, external hard drives, and even some wireless networking equipment. In notebooks, proponents say Express Cards will eventually supersede the popular PCM CIA or PC card format. Then I thought, well, okay, that's all well and good. This was supposed to come out back in 2004. Now it's 2006, and finally somebody's come out with it. Actually, for all I know, it's been out in PCs for a while, but I'm not sure. And then I thought, well, what can you stick in it? So I went to expresscard.org, and they have a list of compatible devices, and there's not a lot listed there, but there are a few memory card adapters, a memory module, a network adapter, two television tuners, and six interface modules. The only thing I ever used my PCM CIA card slot for was a Handry memory card reader for my SD cards. No need to drag around a separate device, and that was really, really nice because it was always with me. Anywhere I'd go, I could just stick my memory card in there. Well, we'll see if more people come out with adapters for that, things to stick in there. Interesting to have a television tuner and a PCM CIA, I'm sorry, what is it called again? An Express Card 34 slot. Oh, the 34 has to do with how wide it is. It's 34 millimeters wide. There's also an Express Card 54, which uses the same connector, but it's 20 millimeters wider. The final thing I wanted to talk about was the new Apple Intel ad. If you haven't seen this, it's absolutely hilarious. It's really in-your-face marketing, and just to give you a little teaser, Intel had to apologize about it. Let me talk about a little personal experience with these new applications. I started out with GarageBand, all excited about this podcast track thing, and it was crashing and crashing and crashing. Turns out I've done some research, and with some help from my friends at the user groups, it turns out there's some problems with older movie files or movie files that might have some incompatibilities with GarageBand, which is really annoying. Everybody who said they fixed it by actually moving their movie library completely out of the movies folder. Well, that's all well and good, but then I can't use it for all kinds of other things. So I didn't think that was a good idea. And I'm not sure why, but it just seems to have stopped crashing. So I'm happy, but I don't know why. I do still get an error every time I go in. It keeps telling me that center title 01 does not exist and seems to bellyache about that for a while. Let's see, iPhoto. I'm not a big user of iPhoto. I actually use iView Media Pro to organize my photos. I kind of like it a little better, but iPhoto is sure coming along well, and there may be a time when I convert over. iView Media Pro is really expensive. The next upgrade for the one I have is, I don't know, it's something like $180, which is way too much. I didn't pay near that much for it originally, so I haven't upgraded in quite a while. But I'm taking a serious look at iPhoto here. It's pretty neat to have the integration of iPhoto into GarageBand, and my husband uses iPhoto for our photos integration into iMovie and iDVD, but since I don't actually use those apps, it isn't a big deal for me. One thing I was wondering was, it was really fast on stage when Steve was doing it. It was all cool, but that was before he announced the Intel-based Macs, and he did say that he was using an Intel-based Mac for that demo, so I thought, well, that's why it looks so good. But I brought it up. It's supposed to be able to hold 25,000 photos, and it was really fast. It was, I'm really impressed. It really does move well. I don't have a lot of photos in there, but it certainly was very, very responsive. It allows you to edit in full screen mode, which is kind of nice. It messed around with that a little bit. Took me a long time to find the button. I actually had to go into help to find where the button to push to put it in full screen mode. They have a calendar thing now, and I'm real big on doing photo calendars, so I messed around with that. I spent about 30 minutes working on one, and it crashed, and it hadn't saved it, and there's no save button. So that was really nice. I guess I can't use Save Me to save me this time either. So I went back in, and I played around, and I did another one, and it actually never crashed again, and probably spent another hour. The themes are kind of nice. It makes decisions for you. One of the things I liked, most of the calendars I've used, you just put one picture for each month, but this allowed you to drag in different photos, and they had different themes about how they lay out. You know, they were tilted or were they straight? And of course, I'm an anal engineer. They're straight in my world. But it would make decisions for me, and I couldn't figure out how to undo those decisions. Like, I came out with a layout that had one vertical picture and two horizontal pictures to the right of it, and I thought, wow, that looks good. So I picked a vertical picture to put in there for the vertical one, and I put it in, and all of a sudden it changed it to two vertical pictures, or changed it to four horizontal pictures. It seemed to change it depending on what it thought was best for the photo. And I couldn't figure out how to fix that. I'm sure if I were to bother to, I don't know, you know, read a manual or, you know, look in the help or something, I could figure it out. But I was too lazy. So I kept going, and I was able to create a calendar that I thought I liked really well. You can also put photos in for people's birthdays and things like that. I didn't get that tricky, but maybe sometime. When I got done, I wanted to send it to three people, one of myself and two other people. But it made me upload it three separate times to do that. I couldn't say this is one calendar going to three people. I could send all three to my house and then turn around and pay shipping to mail them again, or I could do them one at a time. And I thought that was kind of stupid because it was a pretty large file. I think it was like 17 meg when it went up, so it took quite a while. I played around a little teeny bit with iWeb. I only got as far as, oh, I didn't even explain what iWeb is. iWeb is a new tool being introduced into the iLife 06 suite, which allows you to create blogs and podcasts and publish them to .Mac or publish them to another website of your own. So this might be really fun. I'm sure I'm still going to need Feeder, no question about that. But I do want to get in there and play around with it a little more. It uses Ajax technology, which is a buzzword if you haven't heard about yet. It has to do with the ability to drag things around on a website and just have the HTML created for you. And that is pretty cool. It comes up with some templates, and I threw in a picture, and I could just slide it around any place I wanted, and it was recreating the HTML for me. Looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I got to spend some real time on that. Maybe by next week I'll know more about it. So stay tuned. I'm sure I'm going to do more work with GarageBand, iPhoto, and iWeb for sure. Like I said, I don't really use iMovie or iDVD that much, but when my husband gets into it, I'll probably start dropping a few comments. I did find on Version Tracker, stumbled across, they have a link to a list of what applications are already native to Intel. So check that out at versiontracker.com/macintel. One of my favorite financial things I saw this week was that Apple actually passed Dell in its market value. So market value is your stock price times your number of shares, right? Well, this was the quote I found. 9 years after Michael Dell said he'd shut down Apple and give the money to shareholders, Apple has passed Dell in market value. Apple is now at $72 billion, and I have all the digits here, but I'll skip that for now. Apple's at $72 billion, and Dell is at $71.9. Analysts expect Apple to continue to outperform competitors, citing 2006 as poised to be the year of iPod growth and, more importantly, Mac market share gains, with earnings growing more than 35%. So that was a great little tip there on the, just a lot of fun to notice it passing Dell. That's pretty cool. If we can get the market share, that'd be even cooler. Well, have you ever wanted to just talk to a darn human when you call AT&T or Citibank or MasterCard or Honda and you have to fish through all those menu picks? Well, my friend Linda sent me a website with a list of hundreds of companies and the sequence to get through to talk to a human. Check it out at paulenglish.com/IVR. That's certainly a website I'm going to bookmark. Finally, I want to talk about accessibility. There's a thing on the internet that you may not have heard of. It's called a CAPTCHA. I'm sure you've seen one, but whether you've heard the word or not, this is where you're going to a website and they want you to register and they want to make sure that nobody's running little bots or spiders to spam or create fake user accounts. So they put a list of a set of letters and numbers up that's kind of distorted that only a human can read and a machine cannot read. Well, that's pretty cool. Works pretty well. It's, you know, no problem with that unless you're visually impaired. If you're blind or visually impaired, you absolutely are locked out of that system, and that's not good. So my friend Daryl Shandro from the Blind Access Journal is asking Google to use accessible verification methods to stay in alignment with their mission statement, which includes the words, organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. And that's their mission statement. And yet they use use visual verification for access to some of their features. So I don't get why Apple wouldn't want to make it more accessible. So Daryl has created a petition, and this thing is only 3 lines long, so there's no heavy lifting involved, and your email information when you register in this can be kept private. For some reason, it doesn't render properly in Safari, inaccessible, but it works fine in Firefox. So check that out at petitiononline.com/CAPTCHA, or if you can't spell CAPTCHA, just click on the link in the show notes. Well, as always, comments are welcome at podfeet.com on the blog, if you can get to it today, or an email at allison@podfeet.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.